from there, you should see.
He couldn't say the brach in the middle of the Shmones.
When does he say it? Are we talking about the brach?
Yeah, we'd have to say it maybe before Shmones, but then would Shmones itself be a hefsek?
I couldn't picture.
John, you want to sit down here? Please, we just move everything on the slide. Make yourself comfortable. All right, Moshe, we'll start a new perek. Yirtzeh Hashem, the 10th perek. Hagozel Makel. The subject of this perek is the case of Gzela and the mitzvah of Hashavas HaGzela, which is both a mitzvah and also a monetary responsibility to pay back the Nigzal. What happens in the case where the Gzela was passed on to someone else? Either it was a person who bought this stolen object, we call it a fence in some languages, or it was a Yoresh who inherited a stolen object from his father. In both of these cases, the Mishnah wants to address the question of whether or not those who now have, you know, somebody has passed on the Gzela to them, do they have the same responsibility as the Gazlan? Shall we be perhaps more lenient because they weren't responsible for the Gzela itself? And then, later on, the Gemara is going to discuss, in general, what is the nature of the Chiyuv Hashava, and whether or not, for moral reasons, the sons should return the Gzela that their father stole, perhaps to clear the reputation of their father. So let's read the Mishnah. Hagozel Umachil. So obviously we're talking about food substances, and a person stole food. He himself did not eat the food, but rather he fed it to his children. Or, for example, he died and he niach lifneim. So it's either machil es bonav, so the stolen food was eaten by his children, the children of the Gazlan, or the children of the Gazlan inherited this food after their father's death. The Gazlan died, and now they pick up the food of their father. Now, you and I might have said, well, let's imagine that if, okay, we'll give names here, we'll say that Reuven stole food from Shimon, and Reuven dies, and his son Chanoch eats up the food of Shimon. Now, again, without blaming Chanoch, it was no fault of his own, he was not guilty of Gzela, but nevertheless, he enjoyed the fruits of Shimon the Nigzal. He should have to pay him at least, you know, for the value of the Hano that he got. This is a sugya, by the way, back in the second parak above a Kama, called Mishalemes Mashenenes, meaning that even in cases where I provided shmira for my animal, but my animal nevertheless went ahead and ate up your tomatoes, so you can't sue me for the value of the tomatoes on the market, but you can force me to pay up for the hana, the benefit that I got, that I don't have to feed my animal. So basically, when we approach our Mishnah, and the Gemara is going to take, you know, analyze this question, are we approaching it from the perspective of paying, of asking the children, the heirs, to pay the market value of the stolen merchandise, or are we asking them at least to pay what's called hana? Hana means, what do they save themselves by not having to buy food, which is a lower price? So the Mishnah says, Pturim milushalev. The Mishnah establishes that in these cases where the children ate up the merchandise, the food, or they received the food in a Yerusha situation, they don't have to pay the Gazlan, and we're going to see in the Gemara whether they have to pay at least, they don't have to pay the Nigzal, excuse me, but at least they have to pay Mashenenes, that lower price that we indicated before. So all this we'll get to, Mirz Shem, in the Sugya. Now, the name of this Sugya that we're about to learn, we haven't finished the Mishnah yet, is called Rav Chisda, meaning all of our analysis of this Mishnah is going to be in the light of a statement of Rav Chisda. And Rav Chisda is going to raise the most fundamental question on this Mishnah. How can the Mishnah say Pturim, that the heirs are potter, even if they weren't responsible for the gzeil itself? I don't have to penalize them. They're holding on to something that belongs to someone else. So that's where the laws of kinyani gzeila are going to be examined, are going to come to the fore. For example, one of the laws of gzeila is that, according to a whole school of thought, that's back in Daf Samach Vav, we had it, is Yeush is kone. That once the nigzal gives up hope, he despairs of ever getting back his stolen object, at that point the gazlan has a kinyan on the object. Is that what's going on in our Mishnah? Is that why the heirs don't have to return the object that was stolen to its rightful owner because there was Yeush? And what about if I hold Yeush lokani? So that's going to be, I'm just giving you a taste of what's going to come around the bend. Now, the discussion of our Mishnah up until this point in the Reisha is metaltalin, movable objects. At this point, the Mishnah, wants to shift its discussion to karkos, to real estate. V'yimhoya dover sheyesh bo achrayus, chayovim l'shalim. Now, please note that this phrase, dover sheyesh bo achrayus, has a specific literal meaning in its original context, which is a Mishnah in Masechta Kiddushin. But it became a catchphrase for any karka. It became sort of a synonym for karka. It's a code word for karka. Even in contexts where the literal translation is inapplicable. So let's just, just for the sake of Harchovas Hadas, the literal translation of Nechasim Sheisham Achrayis in its context is the law of Shibud, which means that if Reuven borrows money from Shimon, then Reuven's real estate is Achray, it becomes responsible, so to speak, to back up the loan, such that if Reuven, the borrower, does not have funds to pay back Shimon the lender, then Shimon has recourse to collect from the karka, even if that karka was sold to a buyer, and that's called shibud, otherwise known as achrayus. Achrayus means a certain sense of responsibility. The karka, so to speak, not literally, but figuratively, is responsible to pay back the loan of its original owner. Here, in this context, in our Mishnah, the word achrayus is irrelevant. But the phrase, dover sheish ba achrayus, is, as we said before, a synonymous term for karka. So basically, if we want to understand this Mishnah, we have to cross out the words Dover Sheish Lo Achrayus and in place put the word Karka. Now, what's unique about Karka? It says here in the Mishnah that if the stolen good was Karka, and we have to figure out exactly how you steal Karka, then the Yarshim who inherit this Karka from their father who is a Gazlan, Chayovim L'Shalem, they have to pay. And the Gemara initially is going to understand that what's unique about karka is that it has a reputation. Its name, its owner, the name of the owner is attached to the karka. Now, I'm not sure if that's so true in our society, but I think to some extent it's even true in contemporary life, that if you pass a piece of property, maybe you do know who owns the property, maybe you don't, but you can certainly find out. So that gives ownership of nechasim, sheyesham achrayis, meaning of karkos, a certain element of publicity, of public knowledge. It's public knowledge who is the owner of this karka. And if somebody is a member of the mafia and he steals this karka, then people know that is not his, rightfully his, and it belongs to so-and-so. Now, when this Gazlan dies, and now his Yarshim inherit this karka, people are still talking about the fact that this karka belonged to the Nigzal, and this Yoresh's father was a Gazlan. And the Gemara initially understands that that's why we're going to force the Yarshim, in this case, to pay and return the karka to its rightful owner, even if there was Yeish and so forth and so on. And why is that? Because of Kibud Av. And this is based on a sugya in Kiddushin that Kibud Av applies even after the death of one's father. Afil Yachar Mosa Mechabdo. Some of Farshim say that you're not chayiv in kibud, because what can you actually do for your father once he's gone? Kibud means to serve him. But it means shalola vazoso, that you should do whatever you can to avoid any sort of bizayon, because somehow the mess suffers even after his death, posthumously, of bizayon. And here, it's a tremendous bizayon that people are walking around speaking about the fact that this guy's father stole this piece of land. And therefore the heir, the son, has to do whatever he can within the perspective of Kibud Av to avoid that public sort of slander against his father. And now we get to Rav Chisda. This is, as I said, the main subject of our sugya today. Omer Rav Chisda, Gazal v'lo nisyashu abaylim. If Reuven steals something from Shimon, and Shimon is still holding on to his optimism, you know, that he'll eventually be able to reclaim his stolen object, and therefore there was no Yeush. We'll see in a second what's the deal if there was already Yeush. But Rav Chisda is first addressing the case where there was no Yeush. The Nigzal is still holding out for getting back his object. Uba acher v'ochlo mimenu. Now someone comes along and eats, or let's say again, if it's a case of food, he actually literally consumes this food. Now here we have a situation which is somewhat rare in Nezikin, in which a person who was damaged has recourse to one of two people to collect his compensation. And he decides, the ball's in his court, to whom he wants to turn. He actually can demand payment from one person or from another person. Like back in the third pack, we have a case where, let's say, Reuven's shar pushes Shimon's shar into Levi's bar. And there are two people who are really chayef for that nezik. One is the bala bar and one is the bala shar. And we apply the principle called Ratzah Mizegova, Ratzah Mizegova. And Rav Chisda utilizes that principle and applies it here in the case where Reuven stole it, but Shimon consumed it. And since there was no Yeush, Rav Chisda insists that there are two different Gazlanim here, and they're both equally responsible. There's the actual Gazlan who implemented the Maisa Gzela, taking the object out of the Rishus of Shimon in this case. So that's Reuven, he's the actual Baal Maisa Gzela. And then there's Levi, who consumed the fruits of Shimon. Shimon now has recourse to collect his gzela from either Reuven, who's the actual Baal Maisa gzela, or from Levi, who's the one who consumed his object. And that's where Rav Chisda says, Ratza mizegove, Ratza mizegove. It's the ball is in his, he has two options. He can collect from whoever he wants. Now, what I'd like to do here, I really should have photocopied this for you. I just slipped my mind. But I'm going to read to you some of the notes here in the Masifta. And basically I want to focus your attention on three notes. Each one is very significant. The first one is a quote of a machlokes back in the Gemara on Daf Samach Vav, where the Yeish itself is koneh. Rav Chisda, here in our sugya, seems to reflect the shita that Yeish per se would be kone. And therefore, Rav Chisda says that does the consumer, we'll call him Levi, who consumed the freight, is he responsible to pay for this gzela? Says Rav Chisda, depends on whether or not it was before Yeish or after Yeish. Meaning, Rav Chisda's premise, although he doesn't spell it out, but it's strongly implicit, is that if there was Yeush, then the only person who would be responsible to pay to return this gzela is the Gazlan himself. But the person who was ba acher v'ochlo would be potter because there was Yeush. Why does Rav Chisda insist that Ratzah Mizegova is because there was no Yeush? So this note points out that Rav Chisda is really stepping into a minefield here, because this is a gigantic machlokes, whether Yeish is Kona or not Kona, and it would seem on the surface of it that Rav Chisda is maintaining that Yeish would be Kona, which means that the Gazlan did the Maisa Gzela, Ruvain took the object out of Shimon's possession, now Shimon gave up hope, he despaired, he was Messiah-ish. Vayelilich Yisarin Kis, he declares, I'm not going to get it back, there's no chance. And at that point, the Gazlan is Kona the Gzela. Now what that means is that the Gazlan is now paradoxically the owner of the object. If somebody else, let's call him Levi, comes along and consumes that food after Yeush, then the original owner, we'll call him Shimon, has no longer recourse to collect from Levi, because Levi's action of eating the produce took place after the Kinyan Gzela was clinched by virtue of Yeush. And he quotes in the Tosas Rid. The Tosas Rid raises the following question: but we don't know that Rav Chisda is of the opinion that Yeush is Kona. Do we have to therefore pin Rav Chisda down here in this sugya to those, you know, to belong to that group of Amoraim who hold Yeush is Kona? And not only that, the Rambam in Hilchas Gzela Perek Beis paskins that Yeush ain't Kona. So the Tosas Rid wants to reconcile Rav Chisda here in our sugya with the opinion that maintains that Yeush ain't Kona. Why then does Rav Chisda imply that had there been Yeush, Levi, who is Ba Acher for Ochlo, does not have to pay for, is not responsible to the Nigzal, and the Nigzal has no recourse to collect from Levi? Is the question clear? Should I just review the question one more time?
Why is the Gazlan not Kona as well?
Yeah, the Gazlan is Kona.
So why does he have a responsibility still?
Oh, so that we have to understand. If there was Yeush, what is the nature of the Gazlan's responsibility? But one thing is for sure, in terms of the relationship between the Nigzal and the Ochel, if you follow me, between Reuven and Levi, I got the names mixed up. What I meant to say is, when we talk about the relationship between Shimon the Nigzal and Levi the Ochel, once Reuven the Gazlan has made a kinyan by virtue of Yeush Kona, then clearly there's no relationship here between the original owner, we called him Shimon, and Levi the Ochel, because in between, what cuts off that relationship is the kinyan of the Gazlan. That's clear. But is it in fact the case that Rav Chisda maintains that Yeush is Kona? So Tosfos Reed wants to say no. Why? Because even if you hold that Yeush is not Kona, but there is a way that Yeush could be Kona, and that's called Yeish plus Shinui Rishus. Now, the Tosas Rid apparently assumes that who invited Levi into this picture? Why is Levi eating these fruits that were stolen? And the answer is because the Gazlan passed on these fruits to Levi. Did Levi know about that they were stolen? Did Levi pay for them? There are a myriad of questions that we have to raise here. But be that as it may, the Tosas Rid insists that there were two things that happened over here. Not in the case of Rav Chisda, but in the implicit case of Rav Chisda, where the Ochel is not responsible and there's no recourse to collect from the Nigzal to collect from him. What are the two things that happened? Actually, the three things that happened. Number one, there was Gzela. Number two, there was Yeush. And number three, there was Shini Rishus. So vis-a-vis, and this will answer your question, David, the Gazlan himself, we'll call Reuven, Shimon, the Nigzal, has recourse, because even if there was Yeush, nevertheless there was no Shini Rishus. But vis-a-vis Levi, Shimon has no recourse, because Reuven the Gazlan passed on the object, the stolen goods, over to Levi, and now we have not only Gzela and Yeush, but we have Gzela, Yeush plus Shini Rishus.
And but he still has recourse against the Gazlan?
No.
Even that.
Then that's the implicit case. When is there no recourse on the part of the Nigzal to the to the you talk about the Gazan himself. Oh, okay. I was focused now on the Ochel. Again, Rav Chisda's focus is here. Can the Nigzal collect from the Ochel who consumed the object? And Rav Chisda's answer is, depends whether it was Yesh or it wasn't Yesh. Comes along to Tosfos Ritten, he says, don't misunderstand Rav Chisda that if there was Yesh, then it's no longer recourse to the Nigzal from the Nigzal to the Ochel because of Yesh. No, that's not so. There's no longer recourse because there was Yesh plus Shini Rishus. Now Yechiel's raising another question. What about the Gazlan? Now, in this case, what happens is, once the Gazlan is Kone, so there are two repercussions. Number one, there's no longer ownership. It's like Zela on the object per se, because he acquired ownership on the object. Again, that doesn't seem to be very relevant here, because he's already passed on the object to Levi. But then there's the second repercussion, and that's very significant, namely, that even though he makes a kinyan, he's not completely exonerated from his chiyuv hashava. Meaning, there's no longer a chiyuv hashava on the be'en, but now it becomes a chiyuv hashava on damin. And that's where we go back to our mishnayis that we did over the course of a number of months called Ke'en Shas Hagzela. In other words, remember, if it went up in value or if it depreciated in value, it's all frozen at the time of the Gzela itself. Okay, that's number one. Again, there's a lot more to cover here, but you know, we're limited in how much we can cover. I want to go on to number two. And here he notes a shita of the Baal HaMa'ar. The Baal HaMa'ar argues with the Rashba who came before him. Well, they were more or less contemporaries. And the Rashba says that in the case where there was no Yeush, then the Ochel, that was Levi, is responsible, no less than the Gazan himself, to the Nigzal. And why again? Because Rav Chisda says there was no Yeush. Says the Rashba, it matters not how the Ochel had the chutzpah, so to speak, of eating this, that's just my term, that's not the Rashba's term, of eating these stolen foods. He may have done it midaito shel hagazlan, he may have done it balkarcho shel hagazlan. The Gazlan's invitation, or his interest, or his approval for Levi to eat these fruits is irrelevant. Says the Rashba, at the end of the day, the Metzius, the reality is that the Ochel, that's Levi, ate these fruits, and therefore he becomes responsible to pay for these fruits. Again, all this is because there was no Yesh. Comes along the Baal HaMa'ar, and he says, no, Dafka im Ochal Balkarcho, if he ate it against the will of the Gazlan, that means Levi usurped these fruits from the Gazlan, then Yesh Lechaivo, then he becomes responsible. Avol Benosan Lo Midaito, if the Gazlan actually invited the Ochel, we'll call him Ruvain, the Gazlan invited Levi, the Ochel, to eat these fruits, Rak Harishon Chayev, only Ruvain the Gazan is Chayev. Why? And here's the interesting logic. Baal HaMa'ar is always famous for his new kind of approach. He says, Kevan shenis nisinoso li acher necheves kihishtamshu shalo. If the Gazan has vested interest by inviting the Ochel, we call him Levi, to eat from these fruits, that's considered nechshav ki'ilu hu bi'atzmo ochlo. It's considered as if he himself, the Gazlan, was the one who consumed the fruits. Physically, in reality, who consumed the fruits? It wasn't Reuven the Gazlan, but rather it was Levi the Ochel. But since Levi was, so to speak, commissioned by Reuven, meaning Reuven invited him to eat, then Reuven gets benefit from that. Again, keep in mind, the Malamar doesn't make it, he doesn't stipulate the condition that Levi was paid for this, for this Ochel, and therefore the Gazlan, benefited the money that he could pocket. That's irrelevant. But he says the very fact that he, the Gazlan, gave it to Levi, that itself makes it into a Hishtamshus. And if you're interested in the Rambam, this generates a whole literature about what does the Rambam hold, like the Rashbah, does he hold like the Baal HaMaor? There are different opinions on where to classify the Rambam. Okay. Now we get to the third note that I wanted to share with you. Let's again read the language of the Gemara. My Taima, the Gemara says, what's the underlying logic of Rav Chisda? Kol Kama Delo Nisyashu Abaylin Birshusei Demare Kod. Which literally translates in the following, that even though the object was stolen, which means that physically it's no longer in the domain in the Rishus of the Nigzal, for example, if Shimon, the Nigzal, wants to get access to these fruits, he has no way of doing so. He's prevented, he's blocked from doing so. Nevertheless, it's considered al-pidin, halachically, legally, to as if it were still in his possession. And the question I wanted to raise with you is, and that's what I think this is very interesting, is that really so? Does halacha really view the nigzal as the owner of the object, even after it's stolen? Forget about yeush, forget about shini rishus, forget about everything. Well, l'chora, and this is the point of the Tosfos Rit again, that's not so. The Gemara establishes in many places that the Nigzal is no longer considered the owner of the object, even before Yeush, from the very moment it's been taken out of his Rishus. And that's called Ze'eno Yochel Lahagdish V'Ze'eno Yochel Lahagdish, which means the following. In order to be Magdish, something you have to be the owner. In this particular case, it's like no man's land. No one is considered the owner. Not the Gazlan, nor the Nigzal. The Nigzal is not considered the owner, and he can't be Magdish Lefisha Eino Bershuso. It's out of his domain. The Gazlan can't be Magdish it because Eino Shalo. Again, this is before Yesh. He can't claim ownership over it. So nobody seems to own it. It's somewhere in suspended, I don't know what you'd call it, in
Limbo.
In limbo, right? It's in limbo. So Frekta Tosfos Rit, I don't understand. How could Rav Chisda postulate that the Ochel is going to be personally responsible, liable to compensate the Nigzal? Why? Because the object is considered to be in the Rishus of the Nigzal, because it's before Yeush. How could that be true? Even before Yeush, the object is out of the Rishus of the Nigzal, not just physically, but even halachically. And the proof in the pudding is that he can't be Magdishit. Comes along the Tosfos Rit, and he establishes that Hegdesh is the exception to the rule rather than the rule. Why? Because the Pasuk says, Adam ki Yagdish es Beso, and the Gemara derives from that Pasuk Beso, that ma beso bershuso, kach kol bershuso, yotza nigzal, gzela sheina bershuso. That with regard to Hegdesh, in order for a person to have the ownership of being, that gives him capability of being magdashid, he has to have a full-fledged ownership in which he has access to the object like his bias. But if he's locked out of and blocked from access to the object, it's not considered like bias, and therefore he can't be magdashit. Says the Tosfos Rit that in universal definition or standard of bialus, the nigzal, as long as he wasn't misyayish, is still considered the bialim. And perhaps that reflects the hope and the optimism of the nigzal of retrieving his object and the responsibility that the Torah has imposed upon the Gazan to return the object. Combine those two together, the Nigzal is considered to have ownership and he possesses the object even though he doesn't have access to it. But there's a new definition of bialus, a higher standard of ownership when we define ownership vis-a-vis the law of what? hegdesh. In order to be magdish something, it's not enough that you have theoretical bialus or some sort of legal ownership that maybe someday the gazlan will do tshuva and he'll return the object to you. That's not enough. You need actual access to the object. It's got to be beso. It's got to be physically in your rishus in such a way that you have access to it. So again, now let's get back to Rav Chisda. According to Tosus Rid, Rav Chisda is saying the following, that if Yeush hasn't taken place, then as far as Dini Bailus in general, universal, is concerned, the Nigzal is still considered the Bailum. If we add the Rashba into the equation, the Ochel, even if he was given permission and he was invited to eat these fruits by the Gazlan, that's irrelevant to the Nigzal. The Nigzal still has rights to point his finger, the finger of accusation, at the Ochel and say, look, it's still mine. It's mine in the full sense. Again, I can't be buying the shit, okay, but it's still mine. And the reason for that is because I wasn't Messiah. And you took my fruits and you ate them. You're responsible for that. Now again, are you responsible towards Gazlan? Are you responsible towards Mazik? I don't know. I mean, that may depend upon whether he was aware of the fact that he was buying stolen goods. And maybe if he was blind to that fact, then he's a Mazik. And he has to pay as a mazik. Now we add the Baal Amar into the equation. The Baal Amar says, no. If the Gazlan invited the Nigzal, I'm sorry, if the Gazlan invited Levi, the Ochel, into the picture, that's considered his, meaning the Gazlan's ishtamshus. And therefore, it's almost as if the Ochel is the Yad HaRichta, is the extended arm of the Gazlan. And in such a case, says the Baal Amar, Rav Chisda would agree that the Nigzal has no recourse to collect from the Ochel. Then, to add to boot, the implication, the implicit statement of Rav Chisda. What's the implicit statement of Rav Chisda? So first, the Tosfos Rid thinks the implicit statement of Rav Chisda is that Yeush is Kona. And the Tosfos Rid is not happy with that because there's a whole school of Amoraim that say the Yeush Bichdi Lo Kani on Daf Samach Vav. Says the Tosfos Rid, here Yeush is Kona, even if I hold in general Yeush is Eino Kona, because of Shini Rishus. That if we add to Yeush Shini Rishus, then the Gazlan is Kona according to everyone. And here we have a Chiddush of Rabbi Chanan Wasserman. Rabbi Chanan wants to know whether when we say that Yeush v'Shini Rishus is Kona, is it specifically, deliberately in that sequence? What happens, for example, asks Rabbi Chanan, if the object was stolen, then it was transferred over to the third party before the Nigzal was Misyayish, and then subsequently the Nigzal was Misyayish. Is it necessary that the Yeish took place at time T1 and then the Shini Rishus at time T2 subsequently? Or is the order irrelevant and the sequence could be the exact opposite, in which the Shini Rishus took place first and the Yeish took place second? And Rabbi Chanan basically breaks down his question into a very fundamental question. How do we view the relationship between Yeush and Shini Rishus? 1 plus 1. Or 0 plus 0, I should say, because each one, Yeush or Shini Rishus independently, would not effectuate a kinyan. Is it that Yeush really has the potential of effectuating a kinyan, except for one problem, and that's the Chiyuv HaShav? The Chiyuv HaShav itself prevents the Yeush from clinching the kinyan when the object is passed on to another person. That third party is not Chayiv in HaShava. And that's what it means that Yeush is Kona Lekuli Alma with Shini Rishus, because I removed the blockage. The blockage was the Chiyuv HaShava. Or do we say no, says Rav Chanan? Could be that Shini Rishus itself is a Maisa Kinyan. In and of itself, it's not sufficient as a Maisa Kinyan, but I could add Yeush as part of the Kinyan, in which you have a double, you know, you double up against the Nigzal. You have on the first hand, the Nigzal makes his move, he's Messiah. And number two, the Gazlan has passed on this object to someone else that also, you know, Prav is Badlus, it's another demonstration of his ownership from the point of view of the Gazlan. So we have both you know, one move on the part of the Nigzal and another move on the part of the Gazlan, the combination thereof is explosive, and it removes the Nigzal from this object completely. He'll never be able to claim ownership on this object because there was both Gzela, there was both Yeyush and Shita Rishus. Says Rabbi Chanan, the order, the sequence is irrelevant, and therefore the Yeyush could take place even after the Shita Rishus. Alright. All this is wonderful, except for our mission. And Mishnah seems to say the exact opposite of Rav Chisda. Tanan, what are we going to do with our Mishnah? Okay. Now, please note, as we move on here, the Rashi on line 4, Rashi says, Bershusei demorekoi, zesha ochlo nase kigozlo mibailo. I would suggest that Rashi might be implying that the Ochel himself is a Gazlan. And, you know, I find myself in a very uncomfortable position because this is not so. The Gemara establishes, and this is based on a pasuk in Parshas Mishpatim, that Hagonev min Haganov is not Chayev as a Ganov. It's only the guna of the pasuk says the guna mi beis ha'ish, and the Gemara establishes in Bava Kama Daf Samach Tes, we had it not long ago, that mi beis ha'ish v'lo mi beis haganov. So how could Rashi possibly say that the ochel is considered kigozlo mi bailov? What do you mean kigozlo mi bailov? The Gemara itself establishes that agonev min haganov is not chayev. Perhaps we can differentiate between Gneva and Gzela. I don't know. Maybe the Gemara Daf Samach test is only focused on Kefel. Who pays Kefel? A Ganov. When does a Ganov pay Kefel? If he steals it from Beis Ha'ish, but not if he steals it from Beis HaGanov. So the second Ganov who steals it from the first Ganov is not Chayev Kefel, by virtue of the Gzeres HaKos V'Gunav V'Beis Ha'ish. But that has no implication as far as Gzela is concerned. Gzela can have a whole string of Gazlonim. They're all considered Gazlonim or Chayef to the Bailim as long as there was no Yeush and the object is still owned by the Nigzal. See, he says the following in the name of the Or Sameach and the Chazan Ish. Lo nismayit hagonev ben haganov el michiv kefel. Avali olam din gazlon yeshlo me'abailam harishonim. Again, he didn't physically take it out of the rishus of the bailam harishonim. He took it out of the rishus of the gazlon. Le'inyin chiv keren. But as far as keren is concerned, he, the second gazlon, is responsible to the nigzal to pay back the value, the principal, as we call it, of the object of the nixal. I v'guna v'beis ha'ish v'lo agona v'beis haganov, says the Or Sameach, that's only with regard to kefel. But as far as the chiyuv keren is concerned, there's a din of gonev and haganov, and it's an endless chain, and they're all chayovim. And I thought that this gemara might be a support for the conclusion of a Meir Simcha. But the problem is, and I don't want to confuse your mind, is that, you know, there were generations of Gedolei Yisrael before Rav Meir Simcha, and none of them gave this answer. And they all came up with other answers. This answer of Rav Meir Simcha seems to be the most, shall I say, accessible, the simplest one. And yet they avoid it like the plague. For example, I'll quote to you the Ktzos. Ksos lived almost a century before the Rav Meir Simcha. And he writes, Nismayit she'ein eino gazlon klal came into kfar gozl. The Mir tells me that there's no such thing as a gzela from an object that's already stolen. U'masha ha'ochel chayev hu midin mazik. That the only reason why the nigzal has recourse to the ochel is not because the ochel is a gazlon. He can't be a gazlan. He didn't steal it from the hulo hotziat achefetz mishuso shel anigzal. So he can't be a gazlan. But rather, he's responsible to Torah's mazik. And of course, we all know who is the Bar Plukta of the Ketzos. Kedark of HaKodesh. The Nesivus, right? So the Nesivus writes, Dafka HaGozel MeHaGanov O MeHaGazlan Ein Lo Din Gazlan. Avak Sha'ochlo Yeshlo Din Gazlan. Yeshlo Din Gazlan. He says the following, we exclude Gzela from a Gazlan. And that principle applies, again, this is against the Or Sameach. Even when we're not talking about Kefal, we're talking about Keren. But why is it that the halacha of Hagodi Minaganov or Golza Minagazla doesn't apply over here? Why is it that he has recourse? Not Petoris Mazik, but Mishum Shahosif Hu Bagzela Atzma. When Reuven steals and then Levi steals from Reuven, Levi doesn't add anything. One gzela after the other is considered the same gzela all over again. We once had a discussion about this. I don't know if you remember now. 9 o'clock the class. Why is this case of Rav Chisda different? Because the ochel adds something to the gzela. What upgrades the gzela? The fact that it was completely consumed. Lifnechen, af shehoya gozel, mikomakom hoya adayin shelo. Again, we're talking before Yeush, and the Gemara establishes that before Yeush, who owns this object? The Nigzal owns the object. Already, it's stolen, but it's still his. Again, not for Hegdish. The Ato, but now, Sha'ochlo, Ein lo bo'olamo klum. He doesn't have an object. It's been completely consumed. It went up in smoke. So again, what we have to now analyze is the nafkamina between the Ketzos and the Nesivus, because both are saying something very similar. The Ketzos is saying that the liability of the Ochel is Betoras Mazik, whereas the Nesivus is saying that the reliability of the Ochel is Betoras Gazlan. Aye, we have a rule that there's no Gzela from a Gazlan. Can't steal it from someone who already stole it, because you're not adding anything. The answer is here, he's adding something, because before his Achila, the Nigzal was still the owner of the object. Alright, he doesn't have access to it, but he's holding out, because before Yeish, to get to return to retrieve the object. But once it's eaten, it's consumed, he no longer has recourse and no hope to get back the object.
So is he saying he replaces the Gazlan, or he's an addition to the Gazlan?
It's a new Maisa Gzela. Yeah, how can there be a new Maisa Gzela and it becomes a Gazlan, and now the Nigzal has recourse to collect from him because he ate it, he consumed it. Yeah, the Ketzos denies it. The Ketzos says there's no such thing as a Maisa Gzela once the first Gzela took place. And that's based on the Pasuk Guna Mibes Ha'ish V'lo Mibes HaGazlan.
According to the Sivas, now how many Gazlan are there now? Two or one?
Two. And that's why Ratzavi Zegov or Ratzavi Zegov. According to the Ketzos, there's only one Gazlan. Where Ratzavi Zegov, the second one, is because of Mazik.
Okay.
And according to Meir Simcha, there could be many Gazlanim as far as the Karen is concerned. And this special halacha that there can only be one Ganav, with the real Ganav, please stand up. That's only vis-a-vis Kefel, but has no relevance to our discussion about Karen. So that's fascinating. Now, what does our Mishnah say? Tnan hagozel umachil es bono v'iniach lifneihem pturim milashalim. The Mishnah goes on record as saying that the Nigzal has no recourse to collect his gzela from the Yarshim of the Gazlan. That's against Rav Chisda, head-on collision. Rav Chisda just said that Ratzimizegova. So if you can't collect from the Gazlan, collect from someone else. In this case, the Yarshim. And not only that, the Mishnah says he was machil as bonov. So we cover even the Nesivus, that there was a separate gzela because the bonim ate the object, they consumed it. Tiyufta de Rav Chisda. Is this not a question on Rav Chisda? Now there's one word that's missing here. Tiyufta, right? It doesn't say a second Tiyufta. That means that there is an answer to this question. And you guessed it. Amal Rav Chisda ki Tanya. Tanya here means a Mishnah, but when the Mishnah says Hahi Liachar Yeush. And this was the implication that we started with in Rav Chisda. That when is it that the that the nigzal has no recourse to collect from the ochel. That's only because it was liachar. When does he have recourse to collect from the nigzal? That was lo nisya'i shabaylim. So if lo nisya'i shabaylim, he can collect from the ochel. The Mishnah itself says that he has no recourse to collect from the ochel, right? Eino gova mina yorshim or mina ochlim to reveal a shalit. And why is that? Because we're talking about a case of liachar yesh. So it comes out to the coin of Chizda, we have to add a major stipulation to our Mishnah. Our Mishnah is only relevant and only applicable if there was yesh. Once there was yesh, and according to Tosfos Rid, Shinui Rishus, therefore the Nigzal no longer has ownership rights to the object. The object is already konui, it's out of his Rishus, out of his ownership completely, and therefore he cannot possibly collect from the Yorsh. And once again, I want to share with you three notes on this sukkah. The first note is based on the Ritva. And I'll read to you the language of the Ritva. It's very short and concise. He says the following. What's the story here in Lifnei Yeush? If lo nisyashua bailim, we said, Ratzmi ze go vamin, according to Rav Chisda, there is recourse to collect from the ochel. What responsibility does the ochel have? He says the following. Beinim yoda shadovar gozul, bein im lo yoda. In other words, this ochel might be totally, what word am I looking for? Naive, if I could say that. He has no knowledge of the fact that it was a stolen object. This is not a classical fence. Mikomakom, nevertheless, he's considered a gazlan. How could that be? The answer is, says the Ritva, his kaven ligzol mea gazlan arishon. That the reason why he has the status of a gazlan, again, this is not the Ktzos. The Ktzos says that his culpability is b'toras mazik. This can only work out according to either the arsameach vis-a-vis the keren, or the nesivus, who says that a gazlan and a gazlan is also a gazlan. But the truth of the matter is that I believe that this Ritva has no relevance to our previous discussion. Our previous discussion addresses the following question. The original owner, the Nigzal, does he have recourse to collect from the Ochel? And if he does, why does he? After all, a gozel min a gazlan is not a gazlan. And the answer is, in linking up the nigzal with the ochel, right, even though there's a break in the middle, we have the answer of the ktzos, we have the answer of the nesivus, we have the answer of the arsameach. The Ritva, on the other hand, I think is addressing a different question. And that is, what's the relationship between the first gazlan and the ochel? And he suggests the following. This is a pretty radical breakthrough, that even if the second gazlan, if you call him that, had no knowledge of the fact that he was stealing, he's nevertheless considered a gazlan. Why? He didn't have any knowledge that he was stealing from the nigzal, but he knew that he was stealing from the gazlan. He's not totally naive. He's not totally guiltless. In other words, when we ask the question about the culpability of the Ochel, of Levi, we have to really break down that question into two parts. Where is his level of guilt? Is he guilty because he was stealing from the Nigzal? And that's the issue that's being addressed by all the Achronim that we discussed earlier. Or is he guilty because he's stealing from the Gazlan? And the Ritva's Chiddush is that even if you hold, you maintain that this Ochel is guiltless from the perspective of the Nigzal, he doesn't know that it's stolen goods. He naively believes that it belongs to the Gazlan, because he doesn't know the previous history. Nevertheless, he's a Gazlan vis-a-vis the first Gazlan. So we have now Gazlan Rishon and Gazlan Sheni. And the fascinating thing here is that he writes Im agazon arishon nosan lo. You remember we get back to the machlokas between the Rashba and the Balamar. How did the object end up in the hands or on the table of the Ochel, of Levi? And according to the Balamar, we insisted that that the Ochel took it against the will. You know, he absconded, he confiscated this Ochel from the Gazlan. But according to the Rashba, we said it's even midaito, even if the Gazlan gave it to him in Rishus. He says, "My Gazlan Arishon Nosan Lo." Then, according to the Ritva, he's not a Gazlan. Mimavshak, he's not a Gazlan. He has no knowledge, according to the Ritva, that it belonged to the Nigzal originally. He has no knowledge that he's not a Gazlan from the first Gazlan, because the first Gazlan Nosan Lo, he gave it. In such a case, the Ritva would say he's totally exonerated from any responsibility. Meaning, again, the Ritva insists we have to pin down some level of responsibility, or we'll call it of Rishus or of Aryanus, on the part of the Ochel in order to make him liable. Well, what is he guilty of if he doesn't know neither that it belonged to the Nigzal, nor did he abscond and steal it from the Gazlan because the Gazlan gave it to him? The Mimarashok, he has no responsibility. But the Machna Ephraim wants to know what happens if a Gazlan steals something b'shogeg. Is the Ritva telling us that there's no such thing as a chiyuv Gazlan if somebody was b'shogeg? He inadvertently stole something without knowing about it? And the Machna Ephraim comes to the conclusion that gam b'ofen shlo yada nasa olav k'gazlan. That there's no p'tur of shgaga from Gzela. And if that be the case, there's an open and direct collision or contradiction between the Ritva and the Machna Ephraim. Because the Ritva assumes that there's got to be some level of yediya, either the Ochel knew that it belonged to the Nigzal, or alternatively, at least he knew, or in his own mind, he thought it belonged to the Gazlan, in order for him to be held liable, to be held responsible. Whereas the Machna Ephraim understood that there's such a thing as Chiyuv Gzela B'Shogeg, which is a fascinating question, has tremendous moral implications. If you're interested in philosophy, which that's not our purpose, but this is a fascinating question in the annals of moral philosophy, especially the Germans, you know. I don't mean the Nazis, I'm talking about German philosophers. They spent a lot of time on moral theory, trying to determine who's responsible and who's not. And the issue of shogeg is very fascinating because from the perspective of criminal action with intention, there was no intention, but from the perspective of taking something that belongs to someone else, you are guilty of that willy-nilly, whether you did it intentionally or not. Now, the only trouble with this Machna Ephraim that I have is that how many years after the death of the Ritva was the Machna Ephraim born? Anybody know? 10 years, 20 years, 30, I mean, just take a guess. 750 years. The Ritva was a Rishon, you know, back in the 12th century, and the Machna Ephraim lived about 150 years ago. So it bothers my mind that the Machna Ephraim, without even quoting the Ritva, argues with the Ritva. And the question is there culpability on a Ganov who was shogeg? I don't know. Anyway, that's footnote number one. Footnote number two is, okay, this is a little bit more complicated. How are we doing on the clock? We have about 6 minutes left, 7 minutes left? Oh, okay. So, you know, to fit this in, this is Tosis Divri Amaschil Ein Gzela. Do you see that? That's the fourth Tosis on the page, I think, maybe the fifth. Okay, so I'm just going to give you a short synopsis of this Tosfos. Now, the Mishnah mentions two cases, does it not? The Mishnah has a case of Machil es Bonov, and then a case of Hiniach Lifnei. Okay, in the first case mentioned in the Mishnah, the Gazlan fed his children this stolen foodstuff. In the second case, the Gazlan died and his heirs inherited. When the Gemara attacks Rav Chisda from our Mishnah, which case is the Gemara referring to? Is the Gemara's question based on the first case that's called Hechil Esvono? Because that's very similar to the case of Rav Chisda where Levi ate the fruits. Or shall we say no? The objection that the Gemara is raising against Rav Chisda is based on the Sefer, on the second case, namely the case of Hiniach Lefnehem, where he, the Gazlan, died. Lo Hechilam, he didn't feed it to them. And Tosis leaves this as an open question. The one who analyzes this question is the Rashba and the Balamor. Again, we mentioned them earlier, we'll mention them a second time. The Balamor insists that the Gemara could not be asking a question, raising an objection from the Resha, from the first part of the Mishnah of Hechilum. Why? Ein makom lechayvam. How could the Gemara say, well, in this case, they should be chayav based on the principle of Rav Chisda. Harei lo lakhu hem klal. You remember that the Baal Amor insisted that Levi is chayav because he took it bal korcho against the will. But here it says in the Mishnah, he machil es bono. Imagine the son comes home during his Ben Azmanim period, and his father wants to show him how much he loves, you know, his son, that he's here, so he makes pancakes for him. He doesn't tell him that these were stolen, stolen pancakes. Okay? And that's the case of our Mishnah, Hayamachil is Bonov, he was feeding his son. In such a case, the Baal Amor claims, Lishitoso, that there would be no guilt on the part of the son. He has no reason to be held liable for this. He didn't take it bal korcho shala gazla. And therefore, it's the who's benefiting here from the gzela? It's actually the father, insofar as he, you know, he enjoys, he relishes the fact that he can serve his son Aunt Jemima pancakes for breakfast with an OU. Okay. So he's being nana, and therefore it's an extension of his gzela. That the tashmish is the tashmish of the gazla. Rak mea mikra sheni, the Gemara can only raise an objection against Rav Chisda, says the Baal Amor, from the second case. Shelo hechilam, he didn't feed them, he didn't get any benefit to Gazlan. Rak hiniach lehem gzeil kshemes, he only left it in the estate. But zeh hayamakam lechaiva, in such a case, the heirs, the children who inherit their father, the gzeil from the father, they should be responsible, according to Rav Chisda. Assuming there was no Yeish Bailim, at the end the Gemara says that the Mishnah is talking about case Liachar Yeish, but assuming this was before Yeush, then they should be held responsible. Is therefore, says the Baal Amor, Tzarech Lomar Shemedubar Sha'ochlu Esagzela Sheiniach Lefneim Lefi Avonis HaGemara Ata Shedina Mishnah Lefnei Yeush. So we're going to have to either say that the Yarshim ate the Gzela, or they inherit the gzela, and therefore we shift the responsibility from the gazan himself, perhaps, over to the yarshim, to the banim, and therefore the Gemara asks, why does the Mishnah establish hareihem pturim milashan? So that's Tosus Divra Maschil Ein Gzela with the Rashba and the Baal Amor. Then we have the Tosus Dibra Maschil Hagozel on the top of the page. That's the first Tosus in the parak. And Tosus says that when the Mishnah says Machil, it doesn't mean Bedafka, Machil, that he actually sat down his children and made them pancakes. But Afilu im lo ochlu elarak nosan lahem, adayin hu be'en v'achidushu shem pturim. Which means that according to Tosus, even if he gives the object, this in this case the foodstuff, owes to his son, that also is called machil, even though they didn't consume the food. Because since the food is intact, you might have had the havamina that in such a case the bonim should have to pay and return the food, because it's still intact, and the nigzal therefore still has ownership rights, and a chiyuv hashav imposed upon the bonim. Kamashmol, the Mishnah says no. that since there was number one Yeush and number two Shini Rishus, therefore the children have acquired absolute ownership over the object, over the food, and therefore, even though it's still the end, there's no chiyuv hashava. Now, just by way of introduction to the next sugya, everything that we've been discussing in terms of why the yarshim are potter is based on shinui rishus. And the question is, what is shinui rishus? Normally, if the gazlan sells the object to a third party, that's called shinui rishus. Or he gives it as a gift to the third party, that's called shinui rishus. Here, the gazlan died, and the children inherit their father. Is that called shinui rishus? How do we view Yerusha? Do we view inheritance as the son sort of stepping into his father's ownership rights? It's not a new kinyan that is acquired by the yorshim. Or do we say no? Once the father dies, he's no longer the owner of the objects, of any of his material possessions. At this point, there's a halacha of Yerusha. What's unique about Yerusha in the constellation of kinyanim, it's the only kinyan that I know of that doesn't require a maisa kinyan. And that's why we're inclined to think that it's not a kinyan at all. It's just that the yorshim take over for their father. Or do we say no? The Torah was mechadish in the parish of Yerusha, a kinyan without a maisa kinyan. And then afkamina is going to be whether the yorshim are kone gzela. We know that they can be kone any other object that is rightfully in the possession, the ownership of the father. When he dies, they acquire ownership over all his possessions. But in a case where the father absconded with somebody else's object, he was an outright thief. Well, do the yorshim have rights to claim ownership? And it all depends on yesh plus shinui rishus. The Gemara here seems to be assuming that according to Rav Chisda, if there would have been yeush, then the yorshim would be potter from hashava, and they were coded with shinui rishus. But that only makes sense if you assume that a yerusha constitutes shinui rishus. So Mirza Hashem, that's going to be the subject of this sugya. Okay. If you want to just take a look at the, you don't have to stay for this, but if you take a look at the language of Rami Bar Chama, right, he says, "Miniach lifnehem p'tur milashalim." Rami Bar Chama is also meres. From our mission, we can derive the conclusion that rishus yoresh ki rishus lokeach domin. That just like when you sell something, there's a new ownership, and that's called shini rishus. So the gazan is kona with shini rishus. Again, assuming there was yeush. So too, if the children of the gazlan inherit something that was stolen, that's like a rishus lokeach, and it constitutes yesh plus shini rishus, and therefore they're kona. Rava is not going to tolerate this, because Rava Omar, Rava's position is that rishus yoresh lav ki rishus lokeach dom. That we don't view the heirs as if they're a new kinyan, but rather just simply mamshich rishus shel aviv. That's going to be the Rashbam's language that we'll see in Mirz Hashem tomorrow. Thursday. So now the question becomes, how is Rava going to reconcile himself with that Mishnah that says the Yoshim of Turim, if this is not Shini Rishus? And he's going to have to push into that Mishnah that it's all one case. It's a gozel machil is bana v'niach lefanav liachash achlu. It was an achila, and that's why it's kona. But how are you going to do that?
Maybe Rav doesn't require shini rishus. He just says that yesh kona without shini.
Ah, well, that's not the language of Rav. Again, Rav says rishus yorish lav ki rishus lokeach domin. In other words, his peeve here with the original position of Rami Bar Chama is that there's no shini rishus. He's not saying you don't need shini rishus. He's saying you need shini rishus. But where was the shini rishus? And that's why he's going to have to really push into this Mishnah, a new pshat, that Hochamayas Kinin Kisha Ochlum. The Mishnah wants to be Mechadish, that it doesn't matter whether the children ate it during the lifetime of their father or they ate it after the death of the father. In both cases, that's considered a Shinui. Again, we have to know exactly what kind of Shinui is. It's not the classical Shinui of Shinui Rishus, but maybe it's the Shinui Amaisa because the object is no longer intact, it's no longer better.
We're talking about the stolen something that there's a yeshiva on there.
Right. Well, now we're talking about metalta. Okay. We're going to get to karka later on. You know, okay. Daya karka mishaita.
Okay. What about if the also?
I'm just going to take a minute to use the.